Support for this podcast and the following message come from American Express. Small businesses are what keep our community together, which is why it's so important to help them succeed. American Express has created a new platform that all small business owners can use to keep their dream alive. StandForSmall.com. They brought together 100 plus companies to provide offers and resources for things like shipping and deliveries, online solutions and marketing to help small business owners get back to doing what they do best. StandForSmall.com/podcast, powered by American Express.
Welcome to The John Roa Show, a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. This is Leading from Home, a special limited series where I'll be checking in with leaders and entrepreneurs from across the country on how they're dealing with the coronavirus pandemic. It's Friday, April 10th. It's now been a full month since the pandemic began. The focus of this virus has ultimately been about our physical well-being. The ailment itself is physical. The symptoms are physical. But the virus is having just as much of an impact on our mental health. Our fears are elevated, our routines are disrupted, and our livelihoods can be put at risk. We're experiencing unprecedented levels of loneliness, which can quickly lead to depressive episodes. And research is also showing that in about 30% of people, this level of disruption triggers past traumatic stress. While we should certainly continue to be responsible about our physical health, we must not forget the other half, our mental well-being. And to start, and I know this is really hard, try to limit the amount of news and news sources you get in your daily life. Experts agree this is one of the fastest ways to negatively get consumed in your mental state. Also, try to find acceptance. Accept the situation is unfair and out of our control. Trust that really smart folks are working their asses off every single day to find a safe way out of this. Finally, if you need help, ask somebody for help. There is nothing more challenging than trying to manage our minds without the support of others. Today on the podcast, you'll hear a story about mental health from somebody who's lived out their nightmare over the last month. In early March, Kevin Conroy Smith was running a super successful business. He had spent years building a network of tens of thousands of influential people and connecting them all through once-in-a-lifetime events. He organically spun that momentum into The Number Project, an experiential event agency that was throwing off millions of dollars in profit. Then a global pandemic hit. Limits on crowd sizes were one of the first things that were imposed, and social distancing became the norm. For Kevin and his event company, this meant that doing business with him was now illegal. If watching his business dissolve overnight wasn't bad enough, Kevin's physical and mental health took a hit, changing the course of his life forever. This is a harrowing and important episode about entrepreneurship, risk, mental health, and perseverance. Just as a heads up, the episode you're about to listen to contains some distressing content, and it may trigger an anxiety response, especially in those who have a history of trauma.
How you living, man?
Good, man. Just feeling really good. Getting through this whole crazy nonsense that's happening in the world and just trying to stay positive. But we're good, man. Family's good. I'm good.
Well,
all you can really ask for.
This is an important conversation for a series of reasons. And we talked a bit last week, so I kind of know what's coming. In sharing this with the world, with your constituents, to me is beyond critical, because there's a lot of important points here that I think a lot of people might be feeling. People are going to relate to what you've actually experienced. And on every level, from the ups and downs personally to professionally, to some of the mental traps that a lot of people I know are falling into during the pandemic. And so to get there, we should go back, 10, 15 years to where this all started with you. Just to frame for the people who don't know Kevin Conroy Smith, even though I feel like the majority of the world does at this point, kind of who you are and what makes you you, how did that get to The Number Project? And then let's bring us to about a month ago and then stop there and then go over kind of what has led us to this conversation.
Yeah, man, I am by definition, I've just been a serial entrepreneur most of my life, but I think one of the opening insurance agency in 2008 during that crazy time of the recession. So I've been through all sorts of interesting business triumphs and challenges. But I, always from a young age, my obsession's been with people and networks and kind of building community, and more focused on the lifestyle side of it. So something that always fascinated me when I was building other businesses was this notion of like connecting really successful people in different worlds, because I felt that that was truly what people were searching for. I think all of us get into work and we're entrepreneurs and we work really hard and we go to work every day to try to build this life. But I think what we're all ultimately searching, at least my hypothesis ever since I can remember, you know, really thinking as an adult, was we're all just searching for a better life and the most enjoyable life and the way to enjoy and help other people and kind of enhance each other's existence on the planet. And I think that was always what was, I was obsessed with, was just connecting people. So, you know, in my mid-20s, as I was making money in the insurance business, I went to an agency in that space, dabbled in some other things. I was spending all my money kind of building dinner parties and building different sorts of events to connect these people. They started as dinners in my house. You know, it was six people. I would connect my favorite artist with my favorite entrepreneur, with my favorite scientist, whatever it was. It was just really interesting to me to how you can help people's lives way beyond the business. So I wasn't really thinking about, oh, hey, John, I know you own Okta. Like, you could use these customers. Right. Here, I'm going to connect you with this potential. It was always about, okay, John, I know you. I really want to make your life better. I want to make you have more fun living. And that was really always the premise. So it started with dinners, slowly built to this crazy level, because I, at the same time, what I learned in that process was I actually loved the experiential design part of it. And I was actually really good at it. So the dinners went from dinners to pop-ups in Chinatown of Chicago, where we'd take over a forged cookie factory, working with a guy like Doug Saltis, one of the best chefs in the city, and we'd open a restaurant for a night. And the whole premise, again, still stayed the same. It's about connecting these crazy worlds together and people together, all focused on enhancing people's networks, which we felt and I felt would enhance lives, and just started building these things. And they got bigger and bigger. And as the network started to grow, you know, that's when things got really crazy, because people would be like, hey, I'm a member of this and I want to host this on my private island and let's do a pop-up hotel. And so I just got to be more and more creative, and things just kind of exploded into these wild events, whether it was a pop-up hotel on a private island in the Bahamas, all the way to, you know, the first performance or the last performance actually of Hamilton, Chicago, and in our, you know, office for 140 people. Like, we just did some crazy stuff, and it was all, again, focused on, you know, people and connecting, and as the network grew.
It really can't be overstated the amount of influence that you had over that group of people. And even to me, my best friends I met through you, business partners I met through you. Some of my greatest memories of you and I partying at a house in New York with Aziz Ansari and Bill Nye one time, and being backstage with the Chili Peppers and meeting the cast of Hamilton. Like, those were the things that you did. And that's just my memories. If we asked 100 other people, they'd have their own set. So you did something incredible, which quickly spun into your business.
Yeah. And then the business stemmed, how it kind of evolved was, it's interesting you brought up the point of like the Chili Peppers or Hamilton or whatever. What was so fascinating was that I kind of found every human being on the planet has the same drive, and that's a better life. And every time I've believed in that and put more time into that, I was reassured that I was right. Whether you're the drummer of Red Hot Chili Peppers or whether you're, you know, sold Okta to Salesforce, both of you want to enhance the lives of your family and you.
Yeah.
So if your network gets incredibly wide and incredibly deep and you have a very diverse network, when I'm talking to you, John, I can say, hey, John, oh my God, you need XYZ. Let me connect you to this person who equally needs to know you. And so it just spiraled, man. And all of a sudden we were doing these events. We started it as kind of a competitor to more of a Soho House. We were doing memberships, like kind of like a YPO. We'd pay a membership fee. You'd get four events a year. And we just became artists and created these crazy events. And you'd come, and they were pop-up Broadway nights. There were reimaginations of restaurants. There were all these reimagination of coffee shops and, like, you know, all these different events. And the whole premise was just, again, to connect people. What ended up happening was the network scaled so large that we ended up with such a diverse and powerful network that a lot of those members were like, yo, your events are amazing. Can you do this for my corporation that I own? It just turned into this business. And out of nowhere, all of a sudden, you know, what I didn't realize we did so well was we built the network and the client base first. And we were basically showing off our work, you know, over the course of 2 years. And so it went from 0 to 1 million really quickly. It went to then 2, then went to 4 million. We were on pace this year to do 8. I mean, it was just out of nowhere, the thing just snowballed. And I think it came down to just no one, again, investing in the right people and really genuinely believing that the relationships are everything. And so,
that's how
we ended up here.
And you were so good at it. And the company grew naturally. It grew exponentially. And I've been to, I don't know how many of your events, dozens, if not more. And it was truly something special, which was leading into this year. You had some of our friends like Andrew Hart who were going to work with you. And all of a sudden, you have the brightest future that you can probably imagine as an entrepreneur looking at you when you're coming into 2020. And a month ago, from what I understand, everything changed. And so walk us through the last 30 days.
You couldn't have changed more, man. That's an understatement. That is the biggest understatement I think I've mentally heard. And I'm so exhausted from just thinking about this whole thing that it's my life changed so fast. I mean, in February, when NBA All-Star Weekend came to Chicago, we had a record-breaking weekend. Our revenue was just out of control. Our net was unbelievable. I mean, we were just having a month that in February, which you don't traditionally have in the event experiential business, it's usually pretty slow because people are just getting off the holiday season. We had the best quarter in our entire company. That was just January and February. So our best quarter ever was the first quarter of this year, even though March was a disaster with the whole pandemic. Just shows you how incredible of a first 2 months we had. So we were looking so far ahead. It's like, wow, this is going to be the best. I mean, it was just dreams were happening. Everything I envisioned would happen was happening. And then out of nowhere, I remember Thursday, the 12th of March, I remember getting all this information. Everything was happening so fast. And I remember the governor coming out and just saying, we're not allowing gatherings of more than 50 people. And I mean, that's like telling someone who designs jeans that, you know, denim is now illegal to wear. Right. So we got in a situation where it was like, oh my God, the product we sell is now illegal, essentially. And it had this snowball effect that I remember every day going into the office, someone was canceling something. Right. And it was just like March, zero revenue. April was looking like zero revenue. Then it was May, and then it's now June, and now July, and now it looks like this could go on to August or September. And we were not only the first to get affected, like events, but we're also going to be the last to come out of this, right? Because people are going to be slow to get to do gatherings. So it was a really, really difficult time. Then fast forward 24 hours, right? So I just got that news. It's like, oh my God, what am I going to do? And just fast forward 24 hours, I also, all of a sudden, and I get really sick, like the flu. And I'm like, oh, okay, cool, it's the flu. And at that time, like COVID wasn't really a thing. It was kind of like a thing, but it, you know, people were like cautious, but it was like 5 cases and this. So you really weren't thinking about this, right? And out of nowhere, I start feeling sick on Friday the 13th. Not a coincidence.
We should just stop right there. Just to add to how ridiculous and, you of course get this on Friday the 13th.
Oh my God. And then I start feeling sick. I feel better Sunday, right? Like I had 2 bad days of night sweats and sweating and profusely, like, but it felt like the flu. It wasn't anything that was atypical for what I would have felt with the flu. Monday comes and I'm back to work. And we started working from home that past Thursday. So like we were all from home, but I remember calling one of my team members and I was just like in the car on the way to the bank just because I wanted to get one last check in because I didn't know when this stuff was going to start really shutting down. And all of a sudden my face started to numb and I started having like this paralysis and really, which wasn't super uncommon because I've had panic attacks before, but it felt a little different and my headache was pounding. So I was like, something's off. It ended up being so bad. I called the ambulance and had them meet at my house and got to my house, which is really close by. I was a minute away. Get to the house, end up, they take me to the ER. They do all these tests. They think initially it's like some sort of like, they didn't know what it was, but they were like throwing out everything from a mini stroke to like all these different things. So I was like, what's going on? Like they were just testing everything. And then they finally tested blood, they test x-rays, they test all my stuff. And they're like, you look great. Let's test you for the flu. And that came back negative. Like, well, we just got this COVID test we can now do with the same thing we did the flu test with. We're going to put it through. We'll call you back. But you're free to go home. So I get a call on Tuesday. And they're like, you have COVID. And I was the first case in the North Shore of Chicago. So it was like, no one at that time knew anything, even less than people know now. So it was like pure panic in the sense of like, what the hell's going on? You know what I mean? Like I'm the first case, I have no idea. I wasn't really watching the news because I've trained my brain to know better than to do that. So I wasn't in that sense of a panic, But then it just spiraled out of control, man. Over the next 3-4 days when I was supposed to be saving my business, right, I went in a dark spiral. And all of a sudden, we get to Thursday, I'm back in the ER again. And I really would keep going back to the ER. And my wife was like, what's going on? And I just was having these panic attacks, which resembled the fact you couldn't breathe, which is all the stuff you're hearing about. It's like, yeah, you know, with this COVID, you can't breathe. So I'm in my head imagining all these crazy things. Every time I'd go to the emergency room, they would say to me, your blood oxygen level is 99. Like, it's perfect. You're breathing better than I am. Like, I don't know what you're talking about. I went so many times over those next 3 days just from pure panic attack that on Friday the 20th, they were like, hey, we're going to admit you to the hospital. Dude, never seen anything more scary in my entire life. Man, I got put in this ambulance. I can't really breathe. I'm having a panic attack. It's midnight. You're not with your family. They put me in this infectious disease floor. Again, no one at that time, I'm one of the first admitted patients, so no one really knows what's going on. So you're like seen as like you have something that is going to kill someone else. So like, yeah, no one wants to touch you. No one wants to be around you. Ugh. I get admitted to the hospital. There is like no windows in this place. It's a floor where there's no doctors. There's no nurse. Like, typically when you go to a hospital, it's like, even though you feel sterile, you still feel very welcome. In this situation, you did not. It was people coming in masks. And basically I remember the nurse looking at me going, hey, you're going to be here tonight. And she's like, just make sure your blood oxygen, if it goes below 90, you know, we'll come in and put you on oxygen. And I was never even close to that. Like, my mom was always reading 97, 99. I did learn that when you're in a hospital bed, depending on how you lay, your oxygen level changes. So I was so in my head that I would figure out how to lay to make sure I stayed above a 97 because I didn't want to. It was just a crazy time. I had more and more panic attacks in the hospital. I finally get to a situation where I call the nurse. I'm like, yo, I need something to knock me out. I have a migraine. And I am losing my mind right now. I won't survive this mentally. And so they put me on some medicine. I've never been on medicine. I've never done a drug in my life. I've never drank liquor in my life. I've never smoked. They put me on this drug, and it was like an antidepressant, anti-seizure. It's like what they put you to knock you out before surgery. And they give it that. I wake up the next morning with two doctors in my bed. I'm like, what the hell just happened? And they're both like, hey, your levels are great. Your breathing was amazing. You know, you're going to fight through this. Your levels in your blood are better than anyone on the floor. We're going to send you home. And so I was discharged within like 12 hours. So I wasn't there very long. Mm-hmm. Discharged me. I stayed on that medication, which was in hindsight a terrible decision because I didn't know getting on and off, you know, depressant medication was not a good thing. And I didn't know what drug withdrawal was. So fast forward the next week, I go back to the ER. I'm having panic attacks, like crazy. I'm having hallucinations. I'm having suicidal thoughts, like all this stuff I never in my life ever had. And it was the darkest, without question, the darkest week of my entire life. I mean, my wife, best support. I remember calling her and saying, hey, Amber, you got to come to the shower because I'm going to do something crazy to myself. I don't know what's going on in my head. I'm really losing it. And God, she's going, it was an amazing moment of my wife and just who's my best friend and partner and just kind of like really helped me get through that. It was the darkest time of my life, man. And it was, you know, it was bad. And I think throughout all that, it was, even today talking about it, I'm getting very emotional about it because it was such a dark time. And keep in mind, man, I'm supposed to be saving a business right now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I was supposed to be applying for SBA loans. I was supposed to be doing all this stuff. And I just had zero ability to do that. I was debilitated. And I should mention, I think an important thing to mention to people who are listening is that my background in mental health, which I didn't ever take serious, was extensive. I mean, my grandfather, my father, two of the most successful people. My dad was a major CEO for a big bank. My grandfather was one of the most successful entrepreneurs I've ever met. And both of them have had hypochondria their entire. I remember being 6 years old with my grandfather reading the Mayo Clinic books or reading his diabetes charts. Or like, we all had this fascination with health. My entire life, I can remember being 5 years old and my mom telling me that I'd come home from kindergarten and she would say, you know, hey, you guys, I learned about heat stroke and you're talking about Chicago in the winter, it's like negative 10. And I would come home truly convinced I had heat stroke at 5 years old. And I remember in my teens thinking I had lymphoma for weeks on end where I would sit in my bed and just think because I had a swollen lymph gland from a fucking like a cold that I was dying. And I remember in my 20s, I thought I had diabetes, even though every doctor told me I didn't, I somehow convinced myself that because I had bubbles in my pee, that was a symptom of, and every time I would see that, it would trigger these deep, dark thoughts that I was living with diabetes. So I would literally, for 5 years of my life, sit on the toilet and pee sitting down because I didn't want to see the bubble because it would trigger those emotions. And so I've always lived with this really dark, dark side of me and hypochondria. And what I've learned to do is just stay busy. And there is a correlation, man, between success and busyness and mental health.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, man, like a lot of us have over the top stress and kind of mental things going on. And what we do is we just work really, really hard and keep ourselves so busy that we forget about those things. And what this did to me as a hypochondriac in the middle of a pandemic, losing your business.
As important as it is difficult to talk about, but what you're doing is so incredibly brave and I'm sure so incredibly difficult to come out and speak about something that so many people have felt, but we are really reluctant to open up to and to describe in the way that you are. The depths that your mind can go to when it does take hold and the amount of control it has over you when it wants to is haunting. It is truly haunting. And, you know, hearing you describe that also at a point when something you've been working for years and years and years on is crumbling under you, I can't think of too many worse things. And I really can't imagine how that must have felt at each phase of that, especially in and out of the hospital, especially having to then confront the business while being under that kind of duress. I mean, that must have just been the hardest time ever.
Dude, nothing could have been harder for me than what I went through. It was for me, you know what I mean? Everyone's different, but for my fears and what I lived through, and I was living my worst nightmare.
Yeah.
And there was nothing I can do. And everyone would say to me, hey, you know, you're dealing with the business, you know this. I didn't even think about the business in that time because I was so mentally in the darkest place I've ever been that I didn't have the time to think about that.
Right.
You know, it was just so deep in this dark place that I just was so focused on getting out.
Well,
you know, I was counting the days, you know.
Well, not only just getting better, but your wife, Amber, also had the coronavirus at the same time.
And so, my kids, too.
And your three kids under 5 years old.
Yeah.
So you're now, as a family battling this, you are in a very dark place mentally, which takes over everything. And at the same time, as again, because I know a bit of the backstory, having to make insanely tough decisions about your baby, your business, which is laying people off, which is redirecting. And when we talked last week, the thing that I've been thinking about since, and that's why it's so important that to get you back on the phone here and to have this conversation, and that's why I'm so glad to hear how ready you were to tell it, is because, you know, again, this is recent past. This all happened to you like 3-4 weeks ago. So it's not like we're talking about years ago, but already in that you entered this phase and then exited the phase, left the phase. And you have now come to these realizations, which you shared with me, that I thought were just incredible and so important. I want to hear more about that.
The biggest revelation in this situation for me, number one, was I needed to get some serious mental help. And I have always hid behind my stress and worriedness and my sense of mental illness with busy and staying busy and being busy to be busy. And it's not a coincidence that I've always built businesses and always taken on those things because I wanted to. It was my only medicine to stay sane. And I stayed sane for 10 years, man. I haven't had a hypochondriac panic attack for the last 10 years until this, and this was the biggest one. But I've always, when I got through it, I would go right back to what I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
And I never really took it serious. So for me, I made a commitment that 2020 for me is about mental health and getting to a place where when something does happen, I mean, you got to think about this. I was facing something that statistically 99.9% I was going to beat, right? For my age, for my health, for all the things, like statistically I was going to beat this. But when I got told this, I went straight to like, I am dying. I was irrational. I got to live my worst fear. And from that, I realized coming out of it, I'm like, man, what would have happened if I was told I had something very severe, you know, something like a cancer, something like those things that I'm so always inspired by the people who just become such an inspiration when those things happen. I couldn't survive that. When something bad happens in my life that's really related to these things I fear, if I end up like this, what's going to happen to me? So the first thing I left was like, I need to go get help. And I think the second realization, and that was a big one, so that's like a big thing on my head, my mind. And the second thing was, I don't think the business will ever be the same again. And I don't think I'll be doing what I was doing 2 months ago ever again. I mean, I look back at the amount of stress I added to my life unnecessarily, the amount of, you know, kind of the grind that I was on. I don't think I'll ever do again. And that's not to say I'm not as ambitious or I'm not trying to build something as big, but I'm finding content in a lot of different things. And so there's definitely a reprioritization of importance to me on different things. And it's not going to be hopping on 100 flights a year to go close every deal that exists. It's going to be a much more balanced life, and there will probably be a move to a warmer climate. There will be big changes that I never thought in my lifetime I would do. But those are kind of the things that really stem me from this is I need to get help, and I need to come out of this building a better business that's not as stressful on everybody who works there, you know?
I completely do. You know, in my, I call it my past life, you know, when I ran that company and subjected myself to that level of stress that broke me, you know, I had the moment of losing consciousness, of waking up in the hospital, of thinking I was either dead or dying, and frankly, wasn't terribly far off. And that's what led me to go sell my company and to get better. And I spent a long time doing that. And so I understand the point you're at. I sympathize and empathize with it, but I'm also so fucking proud of you. Like I'm so proud that you are at this point, horrified about what you had to go through to get here, which is normally what it takes, unfortunately, because we tend to deprioritize our mental health. We tend to find ways to avoid it instead of confronting it, which is what I did. And so I'm you know, I am truly sorry for what you had to do to get here, but I'm so happy you're here and can't wait to keep up with the journey and obviously be helpful wherever I can. And I can't wait to have you back in the summer here in New York and have a much longer conversation, you know, on the main podcast when it's ready, talk about everything, but also to hear the progress. And my feeling is it's going to be one of the coolest chats ever to hear how your life has evolved, improved as you've gone down this path of fixing, you know, something that's not your fault, but it's something that you've been dealing with for a very long time. And having been through it again myself, that is a difficult but such a gratifying experience that you're about to go engage with.
Yeah, I can. And John, I love what you're doing for. We talk about this all the time offline, but I'm proud of what you're doing for entrepreneurs and like really opening. It's interesting because you always told me the book you're writing and the things you're working on, and I always was really like, man, I was so far in the grind that I was like, John, that's a really important thing, and I think it's even more important now. I think people are going to need even more of this vulnerability. I mean, me and one of my best buddies, Rob Nand, just like a couple of days ago realized like in the midst of all this, I think one of the most beautiful things that has stemmed from this pandemic is I feel like people want to be more vulnerable now. Mm-hmm. I think people want to get to like the realness now. And even him and I, who've known each other over a decade, it was like all of a sudden we're like talking about things we never would have talked about. And I opened up to him about my struggles. He opened up about his. And our friendship just blossomed because I think we're all at a point where it's like, dude, we've been in this social media era where all we're doing is like putting the best advertisement of ourselves out there for so long. And I think finally something hit us that's like, you know what? Yeah. You're all the same. You're all going to deal with 100%. Like everybody is dealing with this, right? I will tell you this, man, the one thing I'm so proud of with Number Project and it just excites the hell out of me for the future is that what we've always invested in. And if you come in our business, come in anyone who works, I know one of your best friends works for me, and he'll tell you this. I have always said from the day that I started this company to the day we had all this craziness happen, the people, the relationships are the most important part of our business. And we do business with people. And I think the realization I had at a very young age that every pillow you sleep on, every computer you work on was designed and sold and processed by a human, someone's idea. And people are what make the world better and make the world more fun and enjoyable. And when you invest in those things, when things like this happen, what ends up happening is they come out tenfold for you. So Number Project's going to come out of this 100 times stronger, 100 times better, because the people we've invested in over the last decade have been reaching out nonstop saying, when you get back off your feet, whatever you need, we're there for you.
Of course.
And I think too often we lose sight of that. Even you said that to me, like, whatever you need. I've had more people throw money at our brand saying, when you get out of this, we're going to do this. And I think the only part that I lose incredible sadness from this whole pandemic is the human side of losing the people that have helped you get here and having to lay people off. I think a lot of us entrepreneurs are dealing with that right now, of like really good people that you really care about that did nothing wrong. One thing I'll say that's amazing about the place we're all in is like, we're all in this right now together. So no one is like, it's shocked or surprised when everyone kind of knows what's coming when you, especially in our industry. But I just hope throughout all this that the people that have worked their tails off to help all these great businesses, I just can't wait for the resurgence of what comes next. And I think everyone needs to take this time to reflect on, take this as a huge positive to say, hey, this is a chance for us not to think about how we grow our business, not to think about it. It's a chance to reflect on what the hell do we want to do?
Yeah.
Because we finally have a chance to reset. You know what I mean? And that's so exciting. And if we don't take the time to do that, I think this is a wasted opportunity.
Well, Kevin, I mean, per the last point, I trust nobody more than people like you and other entrepreneurs to get through this and to find ways to innovate, to become better, to use this as a learning opportunity. That is definitely a common thread with everyone I've talked to on the podcast and will for the next, 8-10 weeks. But at the bigger picture, man, I am so happy you came on to talk about this. This is beyond crucial. I'm extremely proud of you, and honestly, it's going to be incredible to watch the journey. It's going to be incredible to hear from people who heard your story today that resonates with them, which I'm guessing is going to be a lot of people, especially during a time like this. And I want you to know that you have my support and the people of this incredible network you've created, and we truly wish you the best in the coming journey, and I look forward to talking to you again here on the pod later in the summer. A big thanks to Kevin Conroy Smith for being on today. It takes a lot of courage to tell a story that personal and impactful. And it's such an important story, too, to demonstrate some of the demons that many people we know live with behind closed doors and the added pressures of being an entrepreneur. If you're enjoying the show, please subscribe, leave a review, and share with a friend. 100% of the profit from this limited series will be donated to charities that focus on helping people through this pandemic. And if you're currently leading from home, or you're an entrepreneur who wants to talk through something or get some advice, I want to hear from you. Head over to roa.com/podcast. That's roa.com/podcast for ways to connect with me, or hit me on social media at John Roa, JohnRoa. The John Roa Show is a production of iHeartRadio and Roa Media Works. For more podcasts from us, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your favorite shows. A special thanks to my producers, Jordan Gasporé here at the show, and Tyler Klang over at iHeartMedia. We'll be back with you on Monday. In the meantime, stay safe.
What's up? I am Machine Gun Kelly, and look, I know Halloween is going to suck this year because there's no trick-or-treating and all that, but I've got a treat. There's a musical podcast that I made with my friends 24K Golden, Ian Dior, and Dana Dentata, and Satan. Well, Satan's not my friend, but Tommy Lee is, and Tommy Lee is playing Satan. But don't just take it from me. Tell him, Satan.
Thanks, dude. It feels great to be playing Satan on this podcast. Listen to Halloween in Hell on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or whatever you get your podcasts on.